Hi everyone, this is Ben Starr with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests that help you lead a more positively minded life. That's right, a more positively minded life. And today we have an especially interesting concept and special guest to bring to you. For many of you, it's not an introduction because you've heard her here on the WBAI airwaves. Today, our guest is Juliana Forlano, the host of the Juliana Forlano Show on the Pacifica Radio Network and here on WBAI. She also hosts Absurdity Today, a TV segment. And she's also a college professor, fan of the positive mind. And most importantly for today's topic, she's a licensed psychotherapist and a comedian. Welcome, Juliana.
Hi, Ben. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for having me on, Ben.
Yes,
I appreciate
you being here. And we wanted to talk about a topic that has been a pretty popular one on the positive mind. And we addressed it last year. Many of you know that right around this time of year last year, Robin Williams passed away.
Right. And it was very horrible for, as a comedian, it was just absolutely horrible.
Well, I think he was a treasure as far as, you know, entertainment and the entertainers that we've all grown to love. But one thing we talked about after his passing was the link between comedy and humor and sadness and depression. And that's one thing that I thought would be great to talk to you about today, Juliana, since you do have a background in...
And I'm completely depressed. Just kidding.
you have a great background to address this topic, since you have an expertise in both comedy and psychology.
That is true. That's true. That's right. Great. It's a perfect day for me.
So what do you make of the idea that there's this notion of the so-called sad clown?
Well, first of all, I wanted to bring up something about the Robin Williams thing. He recently, his autopsy recently showed that he had a common but difficult to diagnose condition called Lewy body dementia. This did not come out until just maybe a couple of weeks ago. And Lewy body dementia may have contributed to his decision to commit suicide last August. The thing with Lewy body dementia is that it gives you hallucinations. So the idea that Robin Williams was a sad clown who wound up killing himself, the Lewy body dementia kind of, yes, he did kill himself, and yes, he always spoke of himself as a sad clown. But somehow the fact that there was an element of dementia in there, for me as a lover of Robin Williams' work and a respecter of him as a person, it made me feel just a little bit better, because it wasn't like our beloved Robin Williams thought life was so horrible that he couldn't go on. He had dementia. And the dementia caused hallucinations that then caused him to kill himself. Now, that doesn't undermine the fact that the sad clown phenomenon is a thing.
It is a thing. I mean, I don't think it's a complete myth. I think there is this sort of idea that there are...
But people cope with being a sad clown. It doesn't always have to lead to
suicide.
Well,
is that why they go on for stand-up comedy, for example? Do you think that people who get on stage looking for laughter are trying to fill some kind of hole in their hearts with laughter?
Oh, I don't know. So I can speak from my experience and from what I've heard and seen in the comedy world. When you get on stage, if you like it, right? If there's something in you that attracts you to getting on stage or to making people laugh, I mean, comedians are everything from Chris Rock to the guy at the party who always has the good story that everyone, you know, circles around because they want to hear him talk.
Sure.
And he gets that same sort of endorphin release when he's telling jokes and getting that response.
What about the class clown in school?
Definitely. The class clown, the jocks are never the class clown. You never get, like, lacrosse hero and class clown at the same time.
Well, because they don't have to be, right? I think being a class clown is a strategy. And the type that you've described has found a way to be successful and found a way to be maybe accepted by their peers, and the class clown is still seeking that out. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I always feel like I was the class clown way before I was conscious of what I was doing.
Me too. It's funny you say that.
Right?
Yeah.
We're slapping five over here in the studio.
So, I mean, I wanted to mention that too, is that I am not a comedian, but I've always found that I try to use humor to connect with people, right? And that's maybe why I was a class clown as a kid, is that I've always found that it's a quick way to, you know, getting someone to smile or getting someone to laugh is a quick way to almost get them to let their guard down and to open up to you.
Yes. And I always found as a, God, as stand-up is so rewarding internally to me because the actual act of stand-up, not the entertainment industry, which is a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
Well, it's so sad that the entertainment industry is what surrounds this beautiful sort of creative art that, you know, can you have to be super tough in order to handle the entertainment industry. And a lot of times people who are really great at their art are great at their art because they're tapping into something, some artistic area that doesn't make them super tough. It makes them maybe more vulnerable. So I think the industry itself could push people over the edge. But the for me, doing stand-up, I always liken to surfing, where the laughter was the wave and you would catch it. And that ride, if you've ever done anything where you're kind of, you know, you create something and then you ride it out. It's very beautiful, except you're both the rider and the ocean because you are creating.
Oh, that's an interesting concept.
That you are making that audience into a wave that you
that
can then ride.
That then pushes you.
Exactly.
Sure.
It's so beautiful. It's this great energetic exchange. And I just, you know, it's a way to be intimate with people. And then afterwards, oftentimes the clubs will want you to stick around and shake hands and meet the people in the audience, and they'll want to meet you or you'll talk to them. And I was always like, okay, I can do this for like 10 minutes and then I have to go hide, because I can relate to an entire crowd of people and I can relate one-on-one to people. But I feel like, I think it's so much, there's so much less intimacy if I make you laugh and then get out of there. I don't, actual interaction is a little different than making people laugh.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know what I mean?
I can definitely see that. And what about the idea of loneliness or depression in comedians? I mean, I know when you do stand up around, you know, any stand-up community or city that has a so-called scene, you do tend to interact with a lot of the other performers, right? Either backstage or just in general from having seen them, you know, in the same venues from time to time. Do you feel that they're more apt to have sort of struggle with loneliness or alcoholism or addiction? Is that something you've seen in your experience?
Yes. And also there's a certain band of brothers mentality amongst comedians.
Like an us against the world sort of thing?
Well, it is really hard to do stand-up. Really, really emotionally difficult. I mean, especially, as I said, if you're a sensitive person, which hopefully our stand-ups will be, because that would make them more, you know, you really want something incisive. There's that concept of a hackneyed premise, something we've all heard before. Oh, you're dating somebody, and here's another boring concept about dating. Whereas if you can come at even an old idea, dating, with a fresh premise or something really incisive, your own particular insight, you found your voice, you found what it is, that everybody loves. It's, you know, really refreshing. But to find your voice in front of a room full of drunk people who are often ignoring you. Now, let's set the stage. People who want attention and feel good when you get that laugh, which requires people paying attention to you and your jokes being successful. Then when it doesn't work, which a lot of times it doesn't work because comedy is often
situational.
Well, you're trying. Jerry Seinfeld said it best when he says he tries jokes out for the team. You know, a lot of people don't make the team. A lot of the jokes don't make the team. So you're facing this little bit of rejection every time you try something and it doesn't really work.
Well, I like what you said about bringing new concepts or new takes on familiar concepts, because to me, a lot of the great comedians that we've seen, right, going back to guys like Richard Pryor or George Carlin, or more recently, guys like Bill Hicks, Patrice O'Neill, and now Amy Schumer, are people who have taken what you said. They've taken familiar topics and they've kind of turned them on their head. And they don't, it's not an invention of jokes. What they're doing is they're talking about everyday life and reality, but from a spin and a perspective that's funny.
That is the comedian.
But
yes.
What I do see in those individuals that I named is a general sort of malaise, right? Like,
well, think about what you said, the loneliness aspect. In order to have a perspective on anything, you kind of have to step out of it and think about it for just a little while. That's what psychotherapy is. Let's step out of this.
Let's isolate for a moment.
Yeah, think about, in a context of understanding and support, what is happening in our life. you know, is there something I'm missing from being the person receiving the psychotherapy that maybe with someone else's guidance I'll be able to see? So you're kind of stopped, you step back. I feel that comedians generally are stepped back from life. I can't speak for all comedians, but I have had these conversations where in order to have a perspective, you're sort of stepping back and viewing what's going on. And that there's a little bit of loneliness there.
Well, whether or not you're crushing it in a room or absolutely tanking, it must be very lonely to be the only person on that stage.
I don't
looking
feel
at
lonely
it. No?
When they're laughing.
No.
No.
So
I feel lonely when
they're laughing
when
with you.
They're not laughing.
Because they're laughing with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I laugh at my own jokes also, which is something that I guess, I don't know if you're supposed to or not supposed
that.
To do.
I've seen lots of comedians do that.
We're having a shared experience
right.
that I am orchestrating as the stand-up, right? So I don't feel lonely when I'm doing that. I feel but in order to get 20 minutes of material or an hour of material, it takes you a year of walking around in a stupor by
yeah.
yourself, kind of, looking at stuff.
So let me ask you a tough question.
Yeah.
What's the worst you ever tanked in a room, and how did it feel? I mean, I don't want you to really have to relive
no,
a real negative
okay.
thing, but I'm interested to hear, you know, what is hitting rock bottom or bottoming out as a comedian?
It's funny because it changes as I've changed, right? So at the beginning, oh my God, I think the most painful, now you're bringing it up, I can feel it in my body, like, oh, get me out of here, like this fight or flight response is here. The most painful thing was the first time I ever did stand-up comedy. It was excruciating. I knew I was going to go in this direction with my life, but it was, you had to get over that. Oh my God, what if this doesn't go well? You know, you had to get over all of these things. I'm going to be judged. It's going to be horrible. These people aren't going to accept me. And you have to face all of that and walk through it anyway. And it was awful. I can't even tell you. Like, I don't know. I don't even remember. I was in like a fugue state, basically. I went up there. I told my 5 minutes worth of jokes. People were polite. It was at a bar. I can still picture it in my mind because it's like having a flashback to this experience. And when I got off the stage, the comic who was hosting, who was a seasoned comic, he took all my premises and did a bunch of tags that he clearly either had in his act or had just come up with off the top of his head because he knows what works. And I had no idea what worked and what didn't work. And most of my act at that point did not work.
Did that feel like a personal rejection
yes,
of you?
Yes, like a personal rejection and like, oh my, like fear that I was not going to get any better. And, you know, if I'm not great right now, I won't ever be great. That was the main fear. Like, and so that a lot of artists, when you read any kind of books like The Artist's Way or any books that talk about, you know, artists doing something, that is the one major no-no. They say, don't compare yourself to, you know, some star. If you're just starting, if you just learn how to play the flute, you don't want to compare yourself to like a professional flautist in the New York Philharmonic or in the symphony. You know, you want to say, okay, am I doing better, you know, this time than I did last time? Did I get zero laughs last time? Did I get one laugh this time, even though the rest of the time you got zero laughs? That's progress. So there's, you know, I had to change my whole way of thinking so that I could navigate that area, you know, to be able to try something.
Yeah, it is a radical leap of faith and restructuring of a lot of traditional ideas that we think about in terms of safety and vulnerability to put yourself out there on that
One
level.
One of my favorite comedians has this. He says comedy is the only art form that when you go in, you know, the audience isn't on your side. No one goes to a poetry slam and is like, I better hear some onomatopoeia. This is Hannibal Buress. So
oh, yeah, he's great.
I'm giving,
he's
you know, credit where
guy.
It's due.
Yeah.
He would say, I better hear some alliteration and some onomatopoeia. No one goes to a poetry slam like that, but people do come to comedy shows with their arms folded. This guy better make me laugh, he would say. And I was like, wow, that's really right on target. You know, you are, if Monet had to paint in front of an audience who was going to rip him to shreds every brush swipe.
Oh, we were talking about Van Gogh on the show last week.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine if he had to paint in front of us spectators.
Right.
We're talking about comedy, comedians, humor. Is there a link between humor and sadness or comedians and loneliness? Is humor a shield? Have you used humor as a shield or a coping mechanism? Ben Starr here with you on The Positive Mind, guest Juliana Forlano. Julian will be back next time in the show. give us a call. We'll be opening the phone lines here soon. The number here is 212-757-5555. How have you used humor in your life? Is it a strategy? Is it something you use to deal with difficult situations? I know it's something I've used sometimes, even, you know, in the wrong times. What do you think, Julianne? Is there ever a time where humor is really off limits?
I have a weird perspective on this. No, but it depends, you know, it depends. I had a friend who was so happy when I showed up at her husband's funeral because she knew I would bring levity and jokes. My mother is not like that. She's like, there's a time and a place and you cannot blah, blah, blah. So she would cream me, man, if I made jokes at a funeral, or at something that she found emotionally upsetting, you know? So
yeah.
It really depends on the audience and who's going to receive it.
I mean, in my experience, I've used laughter to get myself through some of the toughest experiences, including deaths and the end of relationships and, you know, things that I felt were personal failures. I mean, to me, it's something that kind of brings me back down to earth.
Yes.
And says, hey, you know what? Let's assess.
Beings.
We're human. And
yeah, I agree. I think for me, laughter is a coping mechanism. And I remember being on the street at 9/11 down near, you know, near, not too close to the towers, but close enough. And I was walking with people I had just met. And my brain was looking around at how ridiculous everything else was, like advertisements for socks outside of the Gap seemed so ridiculous at this point in time.
Right.
They were always ridiculous.
But right. now in this context,
you know, it was just, you know, so my brain was, I didn't let those out of my mouth because I just didn't feel right.
Maybe at that time you felt like your mom was right.
I did say like, let's stop in here. I got to get some socks. And no one laughed.
Yeah.
Because everyone was traumatized.
Everyone was just trying to survive.
Yeah. So, but I think that's sort of second nature to people who have that comedic defense mechanism. It will happen. I always feel like I have an internal comedian that's always making jokes inside my head. So I'm never lonely, really, because I have an internal comedian.
I love that. I want to bring our audience a quick piece that was done shortly after Robin Williams passed. Just Armand giving his perspective on Robin Williams and the mania, which is what he used, the mania of funniness and comedy. Have a listen.
There is a lot to be said about the death of Robin Williams and the sudden death of Robin Williams and the significance of it to so many people. I've been using Robin Williams as an example of what I consider to be the nature of the manic depressive illness, because he said it himself. This is what he suffered from. And here's my question. My question is, what happens when we have somebody who is demonstrating and manifesting such significant illness over and over again where it doesn't get attended? We might say that about Michael Jackson, but we could also especially say it about Robin Williams. How many times we've seen Robin Williams stretched out to a point where you looked at him and you said, you know, boy, he's a happy guy. Well, there's something about that that's very questionable. For example, a popular song just recently. Let me play that for you.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way. Because I'm happy.
There's something that since I heard this song, I was saying, boy, that's sad. What a sadness that is. Clap along if you're happy with me. And happy is this energy with you don't know a roof. You don't know any controls. That's what it's like. And this takes you to the top. And this is what's admirable. So Robin Williams manifested in his hyper state an energy that many people found enviable. They wanted to have it. Energy is a very interesting thing. People who sell energy are mostly entertainers. radio broadcasters. Somebody I know who is a very peaceful man had a radio show. It lasted about 3 days because he was so peaceful on the air, but he didn't put any energy on the air, and people want energy. So when they see someone like Robin Williams, they say, ah, there's the energy I want from his high side, from the highest side of him. And some of the times you see him, his irreverence for anything that's revered is so amazing at times, and you just, people would admire that. They'd say, I wish I could go to that level. I wish I could be that way. Now, so Robin Williams played a great part in many people's lives, and Ben was telling me something about his growing up in the 80s. Ben, what was your experience with this?
Well, I just think it's interesting that for people in my generation, born in the 80s, Robin Williams played a huge part in our childhood. He made a lot of really big children's movies that we all went to see in the theaters with our families.
So as a kid, you were watching these movies, and what were the movies, some of the ones you remember?
Flubber, Hook, where he played Peter Pan,
and
Patch Adams was another one. Jumanji was a big one.
Now, you saw this, and you as a child would see it, and you would be fascinated by it. You would love it, right?
Sure.
You want to be Peter Pan.
Of course.
And never touch the ground and be flying around. This is called manic depression. This is called mania. Now, it's very often we see mania, and the average person who would see it would feel comfortable with it and find it admirable. I don't.
So that was a bit of Armand's perspective on the concept of mania. And you heard that song in there, Pharrell Williams doing Happy. What do you think about that song?
Well, I've had a troubled relationship with that song myself. First of all, it's catchy. Gets in your head.
It's so catchy.
But secondly, I feel, okay, so let's look at the other work that I do, right? I do the show on WBAI, and that show is also syndicated across the Pacifica Network, and it's on other networks, and it's basically politics and political satire. So we're talking about the main issues that, you know, climate change, which was discussed in the show before us here on WBAI, and we're talking about the economy, we're talking about police brutality. These are not funny topics, but we try to use humor to clarify, because sometimes when you say something funny, you can get at a truth that actually just saying the truth doesn't get at.
Well, look at how successful Jon Stewart was with his show.
But back to the song, I feel that there's this pressure to be outraged in our society, and people wind up tuning out of the news because it's so out, you just can't even it's too much, you can't even, you know, especially mainstream media. I'm glad we have Pacifica because people can have
alternative conversations,
actual conversations.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're not letting you have a conversation on CNN or, you know, on NBC, Chuck Todd is just talking about war, and it's always war. But anyway, so this song, Happy, there's part of me that feels a little bit like to be happy is a revolutionary act, because there are pressures from all ends telling you there are 100 reasons that you should not be happy. Now, a complete pressure to be happy all the time is an oppressive cultural thing. But to be able to reach a feeling of joy, a feeling of happiness, momentary passing feelings, I think that is nice. And it is nice for me to have the fact that we have one song about actually being happy to maybe counterbalance the millions of songs about heartache, about chasing broads, about all the other, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because we had a guest on last week. We were talking about the notion of the tortured artist. Right? The sad musician or painter or writer. And today we're having a similar conversation.
The joyful artist.
Yeah, but we're kind of talking about comedians and performance artists, entertainers.
They're dark too, though.
Yeah.
Come on.
I think there's something about the need for validation from strangers, I think. I mean, is that part of it? Is that accurate, do you think?
I hate speaking for the whole world of comedy, but most...
Well, in your experience.
In my experience, I mean, if I look back, like, not being heard was a fixture of my childhood, but possibly also the best thing that ever happened to me, because now I have a career in being heard. I'm a radio person. I'm,
sure,
you know, a performer, a writer. So Yeah, sure. I don't. Maybe it came out of some neuroses, but I'm doing, you know, I'm using it in the service of other people.
Well, I had asked you before we played that little piece. I asked you what was the worst moment in comedy, and I want to ask you what was the best. I mean, what was there a time where you just absolutely crushed it and walked off the stage walking on air? And what did that feel like? Is that validation?
Lucky for me, I actually already had the psychotherapeutic training before I. Before I was on stage, and the person I was working with, my mentor, was saying to me, you cannot get over the moon or under the bus, right? You can't be under the bus if it doesn't go well. You are not allowed to get over the moon if it goes well. You want to shoot for the middle. You want to enjoy your successes. You want to learn from your losses. But, you know, I do have the tendency to get way up high. I'm a comedian. Or yeah. Way down low.
And
right?
That plays into that whole manic theme we were talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. So, I mean, for me, I can relate to everything. And when Robin Williams was talking, and if you're really interested in getting some really great perspective, I love what Armand said, but some really great perspective. When Robin Williams appeared on the WTF podcast with Marc Maron, he gave a voice to the voice in his head that was telling him to kill himself and drink himself to death.
And he did the voice.
10 years ago. And he did the voice.
Wow.
And it was beautiful.
I would love
to
hear that.
It was so valid. You know, all of us have those voices who are like, well, I guess we can't make this pie. You're not worth anything, just like your mom said.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, even, like, you know, there's this like stigma about the notion of hearing voices in our head. And I think that is a concern if you actually do. But I think all of us, to an extent, speak to ourselves. Right. And have the internal dialogue or monologue, if you will.
Yes. And often we're speaking to ourselves in the voices of parents or other teachers or,
right.
or significant
the stern
figures.
Authority figure.
Yeah.
That
religious
wants you to measure up.
Figures.
Right.
Yeah.
I had one of those days yesterday.
Yeah.
You know,
what happened?
It was weird. It was one of those days where I was in a little bit of self-doubt.
Funk. Yeah.
In a funk. Exactly. And
like a lot of days.
Yeah.
I mean, most people have that.
Luckily, you know, those days are fewer than they used to be for
right.
me.
That's
but, you know, just one of those days where in some self-doubt.
Yeah.
And you know what? I got a good night's sleep. I had a big breakfast
that
this
helps.
Morning and I feel great. So,
yes.
Yeah. So we're coming up onto the break here.
Sometimes I wish I could just go to sleep at 2 o'clock and then wake up and be like, it's morning and start over. But
yeah.
They do say you can start your day over at any time, which I like that.
I like that too.
That idea.
We're coming up to the break here. We'd love to hear from you about how you feel about humor. Is it a shield? Is it a coping mechanism? Is it something that you've used at times? Is there someone in your life that you feel uses humor maybe inappropriately? Give us a call, 212-757-5555, and sound in. We're going to be playing a little bit of music, and when we come back, we want to hear from you about humor. Is it a coping mechanism? Is it inappropriate?
Or if you'd like me to make a joke about your current situation, I'm happy to do that also.
Yeah, Juliana's actually
will make you feel better.
Pretty quick on her toes. So once again, number to call, 212-757-5555.
Quiet.
Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, Tears of a Clown. On a beautiful day here in New York City, you're tuned into The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Our guest today in the studio is Juliana Furlano. Juliana, thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure. Perfect song.
I love that tune. It's a really good one. And I want to go to the phones. We have a caller on the line. Lynn, you're on the line. How you doing?
Hi.
Thanks
I'm
for
fine,
calling
thanks.
In. So what do you think about this idea? Is it
okay, let me tell you, humor is extremely important for me. I would say it's the main part of who I am. And what happens, though, is that I tend to have a lot of anxiety and a lot of depression. Mm-hmm. And I sort of live it, I live more in the negative part of me. And so when I'm able to be in a situation where I could use humor, it's like the other end of the spectrum. And it just thrills me tremendously when I'm able to do that. I'm not always able to. And it's really the other end, the opposite of all the depression. Because usually people can't believe that I'm the same person that usually walks around and feels kind of down or negative or whatever. And there's this other part of me that does all this humor. And the way that I've done it is that if I'm at a workshop or something, and usually at workshops at the end of the week or something, they'll have like a talent thing or whatever, something at the end of the week.
So, Lynn, let me ask you a question.
On humor about that.
Lynn, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
You mentioned that there's times where you're not able to go there. What is it that gives you the permission to go to that place?
There isn't any. I have to have a sense of what it's going to be about, what I need to talk about. And usually it has been, I guess I just did it I was at a workshop a couple of weeks ago, and it was like, quote, a graduation. And so people were getting up and they were talking very seriously about how much this meant to me and so on and so forth. And I did something, but I wasn't talking about how much it meant to me. I was using humor to talk about my experience. And people couldn't believe it. I always have the same reaction, that people can't believe it, and they're, like, thrilled, and that's amazing, and, oh, your timing is so great, and do you do this professionally, and so on and so forth, all those kind of comments. I don't do it professionally. It's really been in situations like that. And so I guess it has to do with some kind of setting that I could see an opportunity
to
make fun of things.
Yeah, I think
it balances out to a large extent when I'm in that space. It balances out all the darkness.
Right, Lynn. It's really kind of interesting because you're saying that it arises. It has to be in a situation. It arises and it comes into you and then out of you, and then you get the feedback from it, which is really, really interesting because people are laughing and then they're coming and saying that it's wonderful. I don't really know a lot of, like, real chipper, I'm enjoying my life, everything's great comedians. Most of them also have that anxiety, depression side, and that's what gives you a perspective, like, all of this is not worth anything, you know, or, oh, look, I just bought this car and now it's a piece of junk, you know, like, that's,
right.
You know, all of that stuff is what brings... It's almost like when there's a break in the story that I've been sold and bought and the reality. That's where I wind up laughing. And also, it gives people a release. So I really like what you said about how I feel so great when I'm in that space of humor, because one of the theories about why humor has been happening since, you know, we evolved out of, oh my God, my husband would kill me for saying chimps, but it's not chimps, but since we evolved from primates, is because it gives us a physical release. So when there's a tension buildup, you have a lot of anxiety, you're more likely to laugh. That's why the structure of a joke, the beginning structure, is setting up tension.
And that's why there's a nervous laugh that exists, right?
Right, and it's usually
nervous laugh is a little different.
Like for me, I will say the lines with a straight face, like I'm very serious, but the words are very funny.
Right.
Lynn, thank you so much. Thank you so much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. Thanks again.
You're welcome.
That's really interesting, that concept of nervous laughter. Yes, there is a release aspect of nervous laughter, and it shows that you're not sort of non-threatening, baring the teeth.
Right.
I'm non-threatening.
212-757-5555 is our number to call. We want to hear from you about humor. Have you used it as a coping mechanism? Do you ever get in trouble for being funny?
Always.
At the wrong time?
Like,
you know?
All throughout high school.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I remember this one. Here's one. Do you want to hear it? Everyone, we're in biology class, and by the way, if you're listening, old teacher who I won't name, I married a biologist, so I guess that's good, right? I was in biology class. Everyone failed the class. I was sitting in front because I'm measured between sort of being a good student and wanting to be in the back making jokes all the time, where most of the comedians always are.
Sure.
Right? So I'm in a balance between these two things. Well, I'm sitting in front that day, and the teacher, I forget his name, he said, "Well, you all failed the test. You all didn't study, and you all did a terrible thing." And I snidely said, sort of out of the side of my mouth, "Well, maybe it's the teacher." And he heard me.
Oh,
and
that old classic.
Man. Yeah. So,
it's funny. I think I may have said the same thing to a teacher in seventh grade.
Ooh, I was in seventh grade.
Yeah, and it was also a science teacher.
Well, they're tough, those guys.
They are tough.
They expect you to memorize.
What is it about science teachers? You know,
humor in science is not.
Yeah.
It's more, there's more specifics, I suppose.
All right. Well, let's take another call. The number to call is 212-757-5555. We have Mark on the line. Mark, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to know if you had something humorous to lighten my load.
What's going on for you?
Just one of those days where I think my life is pointless.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is hard. That is not good. Yeah. We can all relate to that, I think.
Yeah, it's not easy to make a joke about. Yeah. And, like, you know, it just, like, hope goes out the window. That's the one thing you hold on to. But,
did something happen?
No. It's just like, you know, when you look at your situation and you feel it's hopeless, it's, you know, your life seems pointless, for whatever reason.
Sometimes it's really not appropriate to make a joke. Like, when your life seems pointless, like, maybe tomorrow when you're feeling better, you'll be like, you'll be able to look back and be like, well, my life may have seemed pointless, but they always say feelings aren't really facts. So it may feel pointless, but it may not be pointless. And I think everyone I know has gone through that. And especially with the economy the way that it is right now in our political system, a lot of people are feeling like they're not able to, they're not able to be as effective as they could be. And so I'm glad you called in, because it's important to kind of be public about these things and to know that other people have been there and that a lot of people are actually feeling that way. I don't know if that helps you. I'd like to make you a knock knock joke to make you feel better, but I think knowing a lot of people are there.
Tomorrow might change, so let's just wait till tomorrow.
You know, a lot of people say things like, "One day we'll look back on this and laugh," but right now it's not so funny. It's one of those situations, I think. But Mark, good luck to you.
Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot.
Yep.
Take care.
We have the best audience. That was very vulnerable of him, and that was very nice of him to call in.
He
kind of wanted to joke, and we gave him a hug. But sometimes jokes are hugs, and sometimes hugs are better.
212-757-5555. We're talking about humor, comedy, the link between humor and maybe sadness or loneliness or depression, the notion of the sad clown. We just heard Smokey Robinson and the Miracles do Sad Clown over the break. Have you used humor as a coping mechanism in your life? Have you gotten in trouble? Were you a class clown as a kid in school growing up? Give us a call and tell us about it. 212 757-5555. So, Juliana, were you always a class clown, or was it just an isolated thing in seventh grade science?
I was always a class clown. When my, you know, to make my father laugh, to make my mother laugh, brought me great joy and release of endorphins. And so I just took that out into the world. I mean, I just loved it. And I had a very funny family. We all, you know, we had struggles, and we relied on humor, you know, to make jokes about stuff. We'd make jokes about why we always on Sunday have to go, you know, we can't possibly ever go do anything. We have to always go and do these exact five things with the exact five family members. We can't have a freedom there. So there was a lot of joking about that, and, you know, just
making someone laugh in a lot of ways is one of the ultimate forms of approval,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Isn't it beautiful? When you're laughing, you have that. You just have a brief moment of complete release from everything that's happening. From the moment, from, you know, so if Mark, if you're still listening, I'm sorry I wasn't able to give you a joke myself, but if you have time, go on the internet and listen to a comedian or watch some funny movie. You know, that's that, you'll have a release, and you will feel better even if the situation isn't perfect. I think we have other callers coming in.
Yeah, let's take another call. We have Eddie on the line. Eddie, you're on WBAI.
Hi, guys. Hi, I listen to your show all the time, man. Great, great station.
Thank you. Thank you. What's going on, Eddie?
Well, I believe what you guys are talking about, it totally applies to me, because I'm that one person always within my friends and family that tries to make a like somber situation a little bit more brighter by, you know, throwing a little quick joke or you know, like a smirk to try to like line up the mood. Because I believe if you're not smiling, if you're not happy, then nothing is going to become positive around you. And positivity, you know, brings a lot of good things to the world.
Oh, people like you are the best. You know, like when there's a situation and you're waiting, you're just waiting for you to come, like, oh, this guy's going to come and make it better. But do you ever get sad yourself?
Of course, of course. I get sad myself. And then when my friends try to, you know, do the things I normally do, I'm like,
you guys are
don't joke.
Yeah.
But then I remember, like, you know what? If I was the other way around, I would joke. And I would try to find a silver lining, like, hey, it didn't happen today, it's going to happen tomorrow. Hey, it didn't go my way, but something else might.
Now,
so
I try to stay
positive throughout everything.
Sometimes, Eddie, I'd be interested in your feedback on this. Sometimes I've heard and I've had the experience that when I'm the one that people rely on for jokes or as a, you know, knowledgeable psychotherapy person for support, when I need support or I would like a joke, people just see me as the joke dispenser. They don't just show up to then, you know, and then when I'm not dispensing jokes or when I'm sad or if something's going on, they just scatter like roaches. Like they want me there when it's happy days. But then when I'm having a rainy day, everyone else is busy. It's really kind of jacked.
Yeah, it does seem like that sometimes.
It's weird,
it?
Right? You know?
Yeah. It does seem like that. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you have to be careful where you plug in your joke, because some situations are not, no laughing matter.
No laughing matter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Eddie.
No problem, guys. Great show. Great show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that is one danger of being sort of the known as a supportive person or known as a, you know, a comedic person, is everyone comes to you. But it's also awesome because, like, if I'm having a bad day and someone calls me and it's like, I'm having a bad day, and they're calling for the joke or they're calling for support, if I can dump my own problems to focus a little bit on what they've got going on and make them a little happier, then I wind up feeling
a distraction.
I'm distracted. I let go a little. I feel a little better.
You know, Eddie was a great caller, and he strikes me as the type of guy. I mean, this is there's a stereotype, and it's often true in New York City that people are kind of scared of strangers, people they don't know. People don't want to make eye contact, and I find myself all the time. You know, when there's a lot of absurdity going on in this city every single day. I mean, on the streets, in the subway, there's so many things that, you know, if you take a step back, are actually really funny. And people have, I find people often have these blinders on. And I can't tell you how often, I mean, this happens a couple times a week where I'll see something really funny or silly happen, and I look around and no one notices it, but every now and then I'll catch a stranger's eye.
One guy.
You know, I'll catch a stranger's eye. We share this knowing kind of smile, and Eddie, I guarantee you, is that kind of guy.
Yeah.
whether it's on the subway or in the streets.
I think you're bringing up a good point, is that laughter and humor, if you have to really be present. You can't be all up in your neurosis in order. You know, you have to be present to what's happening in order to access, to even see what's going on. So
I got a good story that just happened to me, actually. Yeah. I was on the 6 train, and
it's always on the train.
I'm leaning up against the door, and this family of tourists gets on the train. I could tell they were from, I don't know, maybe Texas or California. They were from another state.
Wait, that's a big difference.
Oh, well, I mean, for me, they were from somewhere west of here. Somewhere on the other side of the Hudson River.
Right, okay. Texas, New Jersey.
It's a husband and a wife and a couple kids. And the woman gets on, and she really doesn't want to grab the pole.
Because it's dirty.
Because you could tell she's kind of grossed out by it.
Yeah.
And the husband said to her, "Don't worry, honey, it's stainless steel. The germs just fall right off." and when he said that, you know, it was so absurd to me, and it was funny. And I looked over, and he kind of looked over at me, and we had this moment of, you know, two strangers sharing a laugh.
Yeah.
And there's something beautiful and human about that connection. That's unlike, I think, a lot of other connections.
I agree. Because you don't have to go any farther. I don't have to tell you about my mother. One of the problems with constant talking about your past is that you're constantly talking about your past, and you're kind of living in your past. So present day, if you get to the ability to be present, then you can really share moments of intimacy with a number of people, and then, you know, you don't need it to be super deep in order to have that same feeling of connection with it.
Right, and I think that's where a lot of people, like I said, in my own experience, I've often tried to use humor as a very fundamental, basic way to make a connection with anyone, you know, even a stranger, and whether it's someone older or younger than me, whether it's a man or a woman, I find that if you can share a laugh with someone, you've now broken down a lot of the basic walls that we put up between each other, and then it becomes this very humanizing one-on-one.
I love the word that you used, share, because to make someone laugh is a gift. Like that guy called in, he wanted us to please make a joke so that he could laugh and feel better. The woman was saying that, you know, she often feels terrible, and then when she's able to make a joke or make other people laugh, she feels good. That it is sharing something. That guy Eddie would be welcome at any family event, from funeral to birth. Well, maybe not birth, but that would be the funniest, probably.
I think we have time for maybe two more calls, maybe one. If you want to give us a call here on the theme of humor, laughter, comedy, and how it relates
What's
to
the funniest
maybe more difficult
thing you ever
feelings.
Saw. In the city of New York.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Give us a call, 212-757-5555. What's the funniest thing you've ever seen, Juliana?
Well, I always think the rats are really funny. Especially when
how people react to them?
No.
You mean?
No. Like, when they don't see them, and it's right at their foot, and you see it, and you're like, oh, my God, oh, my God. So it's almost like something's going to happen, and you want to tell them, but you can't because they're on the other side of the platform, and then the way they go all berserk. Or when there's things happening that other people don't notice. I think that's the funniest part.
That's a huge part of comedy. I mean, like, it's a lot of slapstick comedy, too. I mean, the guy who is walking and doesn't see the lamppost and smashes his head on the lamppost.
Yeah.
I mean, that's because he didn't see it coming, right?
I always feel bad for those guys, though. I have a different response to that guy.
Really?
Laugh at that.
It's not funny when someone gets seriously injured, right? That's not funny.
But when
someone slips and falls and you know, maybe just gets a bruise on their rear end, I mean, that can be very funny. And
it
I think that's
very funny. I never find it funny. I don't know. That's just me, though. I don't, you know, a lot of people find it very funny, slapstick, that kind of thing. I didn't understand why they were beating each other up.
We have John on the line. John, you're on WBAI.
Hi, talk about absurd, but logical, which is always funny.
Yeah.
The funniest thing I ever heard Armand say was that he had to try heroin one time in order to help his clients if he was helping them get over it.
Ah.
So on the one hand, it makes perfect sense, but it just seems pretty darn funny and absurd.
Well, it is pretty outrageous, but he was
he went that extra mile.
Pretty intense person. And did he say that he said that to you in person or on the show?
Oh, it was on the show a while back.
Yeah. Well, he did have this great power of empathy, and I'm sure that if he did do that, it was in that vein.
I know, but if he's, you know, if I said it or someone else.
Yeah, that's right. That's like, oh, that's a good excuse for using heroin.
Right.
I gotta
right.
help just, other people. Right.
It's almost unbelievable. It's so hysterical. But at the time, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
What about you, John? Are you a funny guy? Are you the joker in your group of friends or your family?
Oh, well, I wasn't until Armand said, you know, that could be a reason because when you were younger, you had to get attention. So
yeah, me too.
Like, hey.
I don't care. I
was like, hey, I'm not going to do that anymore. So then people were like, hey, what happened to Funny Guy?
That's very interesting. Very, very interesting. So I had that same thing because when I was doing it out of a neurosis, like I had to because I needed you to laugh because I needed you to fill in this giant hole.
It was my habit.
Yeah, it was a habit. Then I felt like you're kind of strapped to it. It's got you instead of you've got it. But if you take a little while, like it sounds like what you did, which is really interesting, to say, wait, I'm not going to do this anymore because I'm just going to be myself. And I'm going to be present as myself. Then you can go back to doing it because your motivation is different. You're not doing it out of
right.
neurosis. You're doing
I've
it because you want
it. As an ability also just from doing it. So
yes.
now it's true. My motivation is different. So now I can do
now
it.
Now you
if
can
I,
do it.
If it,
without
I want
it
to.
Making you, you know,
rather,
sick.
Right, rather than an impulse or compulsive thing.
Yeah.
John, thanks
yeah,
so much
really
for the
call.
All right, thanks.
Have a good one. We're running up onto the end of the program.
No.
Thank you for everyone who tuned in today. If you enjoyed hearing Juliana, you can hear her right here on WBAI every Thursday at 6 p.m.
6 p.m., people.
That's the Juliana Forlano Show here on WBAI.
There's more jokes. We actually have we start the first 5 minutes of the show is all basically jokes.
Okay, so yeah. Tune in on Thursday and every Thursday here on WBAI at 6 to hear a little bit of Juliana. Juliana, I want to thank you again so much for coming.
I have to say I'm honored. It was my pleasure. A big fan of Armand's work and a longtime listener. So very
yeah.
happy to be here.
Thank you so much to all the listeners of The Positive Mind once again for tuning in on WBAI and around the world on the podcast. We're going to be preempted tomorrow on WBAI for a National Pacifica fundraiser. But we will be back next week. Julian will be back with us on the air. And we want to thank you again for tuning in, for your contributions, for your phone calls. Thanks again to everyone who contributed to the fundraiser. Your premiums will be arriving sometime next week, I promise you. For those of you who are still waiting on the books, we're sending those out post-haste. Is that right?
Post-haste.
Post-haste?
Yeah.
Is that right?
With haste.
With haste.
General haste.
So again, big thank you. Love to the whole audience. Tune in next Tuesday at 1 p.m. on 99.5 WBAI.